Hi, my name is Yara and I'm the host of Life After Birth. Before we begin, I would like to acknowledge the Whadjuk Noongar people, the traditional custodians of the land on which this podcast is recorded. I send my respects and reverence to Whadjuk Noongar elders, past, present and emerging. On this podcast, we share stories and wisdom about the ups and downs of our mothering experiences, much like the First Nations people of Australia have done so through their storytelling for over 60,000 years. Through their oral traditions, the Whadjuk Noongar people have supported and celebrated one another and have passed down knowledge, values and lessons, providing a testament of the power and significance of sharing our own stories. In honouring them, we recognise the importance of storytelling in understanding our past, navigating our present and shaping our future. My hope is that this podcast carries this spirit forward in our conversations, acknowledging that while our stories may differ, they all hold value and contribute to our shared human experience. Hey Mama, I'm Yara Heary and this is Life After Birth. This is where you can find honest and vulnerable conversations that lift the veil on how mothers really experience life after birth. Join me as I talk to the experts in the parenting space, but not as you've heard them before. These conversations explore the common humanity in all our lived experiences as mothers, so that you're left feeling seen, heard, validated, and bolstered in your ability to weather your mothering storms. Hi, mamas. Welcome back to another episode of Life After Birth. This week, it's my absolute pleasure to introduce to you my guest, Ali Heppel. Ali is a mother of two and is honestly the embodiment of warmth and support. She is a sensitive soul who has done the most magnificent job of weaving her training and her life experiences into providing care for mothers. She's a circle facilitator, a postpartum doula, a motherhood studies practitioner, and a guide through this transformative period of matrescence. And in her work, Ali empowers mothers, holding space for their stories and guiding them with compassion and empathy. So in today's episode, Ali shares with us her insights and experiences on mothering without a mother. And that is a really big topic that really doesn't get spoken about enough. It's also a topic that is very close to my heart as it's my lived experience also. Ali goes on to tell us about the layers of identity that unfold in the process of mothering without a mother and the importance of self-compassion as we navigate this rite of passage. She also shares with us how she creates communities that foster deep connection and the ways that she tailors her support to meet every mother's unique needs. No matter what phase of mothering you're in, I hope that this conversation is a gentle reminder that you're not alone on this journey. Ali's story is one of resilience, growth, and the universal truths that we share in the sacred act of mothering. Enjoy this episode. Hi, Ali. How are you? Welcome and so glad you're here.
Thank you for having me. I'm very well and I am very excited to be here. I am a long-time listener, so yeah, I'm looking forward to having this conversation today.
Oh, beautiful. So before we get started in the nitty-gritty of, you know, the kind of chats that we normally have here, tell me a bit about what your family looks like right now. So, you know, your children, who's around, that kind of thing.
Yeah, so I live with my husband, Stu, and our two sons, Harry and Patrick. Harry is 4 and Pat is 18 months. And yeah, we live in the Dandenong Ranges in Melbourne amongst the trees. And yeah, it's a beautiful place to live. It's lovely. We really love it here.
As soon as you said amongst the trees, that sounds beautiful. And I can see out your window, just greenery. It's lovely. Lovely. So, the question I always start with is, who is Ali Heppel? Tell us a little bit about who you are, I guess, to date, and I'm sure that that has evolved and changed at different points in your life, and where you've kind of come from.
Who am I? I am many things, as we all are. The roles I tend to play most often are mum and wife and business owner. I spend a lot of time doing things on my business that supports mums as well. I am a friend and a sister and a daughter. Yeah, I'm many things and I don't know what led me here today, I think is such a big question. There's so many. I think that for me, I've changed a lot and grown a lot and learned a lot about myself in probably the last 7, 8 years. I feel like since my mum passed away 7.5 years ago. So I feel like I've been on a bit of a big change and growth and learning about who I am and what I value. Prior to that, I was very, you know, my uni days and that sort of thing were very much, I was a goal-driven, goal-oriented sort of perfectionistic type woman who was often a good girl who, I don't know, you know, I know that people have these conversations, but, you know, things around wanting to please and wanting to just do, you know, don't disrupt, just go with the flow a little bit. And also like choose things that maybe choices that were accepted or expected potentially from me. So I was a speech pathologist for a long time. And yeah, that was definitely, I loved that when I was in that, but I also felt like it was something that I chose based on maybe other people's reactions or expectations of me, I think.
Yeah. And of course, there are so many influences, right, on that experience that you're talking about, where we maybe, if we call it people pleasing or being sort of the good girl or whatever, there are so many different experiences that shape that. But certainly one of them can sometimes be the environments that we're in growing up. Did you want to share anything about that for you? And, you know, is that relevant for you?
Yeah, I think that what stands out in my childhood and the things that were the messages that were around were really about like working hard to get where you want to go. Mum and dad built their own business in the secondhand furniture business in our local town. And that was like 20 odd years of, yeah, work in that business. And it was lifting furniture, washing furniture, like testing, you know, and that was testing washing machines and TVs. And that was our childhood. That was what we lived. Our second home was at the shop, as we called it. And yeah, we often were like, I have so many memories of just crawling under tables and chairs and being all dusty and watching the TVs that were for sale and playing the piano that was for sale. And yeah, and one of the big things that I saw in my mum and dad was really working hard and seeing the results of that in the way that they lived and the way that they provided a beautiful home and many beautiful experiences for us.
Mm. And it's such a powerful thing to have that role modeled for us, and in good ways, right? Like, of course, it's such a wonderful thing actually to have this beautiful work ethic so that you can go, go, go. It'll be interesting to hear how that's, I guess, transformed, or whether that shifted, or how you've experienced that moving into motherhood. As you know, for many of the people who I've spoken to on here, and certainly with clients, that sometimes that can be challenging. I would say my own experience is definitely that. So yeah, anyway, it can be a bit like that. So tell me about when, you know, you being this person who was, you know, maybe achievement focused, but also at the same time, maybe not standing fully in your own voice, if that makes sense, in terms of what you were talking about with being the good girl and things like that. What was your journey then to becoming a mother? Like, was that a planned thing? What did you expect around what you would be like as a mother and what motherhood kind of had to bring into your life as well?
Hey mamas, it's Yara here from Life After Birth Psychology. I want to talk to you about something that many mothers carry a lot of shame about, and that's anger. Have you ever found yourself thinking, what the hell is wrong with me? Why am I so angry? Why can't I just stay calm? Well, I want you to know that you're not alone. So many mothers quietly worry about their anger. But did you know that your anger carries messages that can unlock a more regulated and fulfilling experience for you as a mother? To support you in changing your relationship with anger, I have created a self-paced online workshop designed to help you understand your anger and learn to process and express it in more adaptive and healthy ways. Within the workshop, you'll explore the role of your nervous system, the hidden messages in your emotions, and even how your past influences how you respond to challenge and stress today. But the best part, you'll gain practical tools that'll help you gracefully steer through those intense moments, all while deepening the heartfelt connections you cherish with your children and loved ones. Ready to get started? garden, all you have to do is head to lifeafterbirthpsychology.podia.com, scroll down and click on my Why Am I So Angry workshop. You can also check out the link in the show notes for today's episode. All right, let's get back to the show.
Yeah, so I wonder whether I could just step back just pre-motherhood and before thinking about motherhood and that period of time that my mum passed away because I really felt like that was like my first unraveling. You know, how like, you know, we talk about motherhood as that really unraveling and that, you know, learning about ourselves. And I really felt like for me, I had that experience when mum died.
Of course, yeah.
And then became, you know, another unraveling in motherhood, right? And so, yeah, if I step back to that time, I was very much in that sort of, what can I say? Like, I guess working as a speech pathologist, doing the 9 to 5, I was a new grad working in New South Wales, actually, because I didn't get quite the job that I envisioned in Melbourne. And so that's okay. You work hard and you go away for a little bit and you can come back and do the job you're after. So I sort of, you know, did that. And then halfway through that grad year, I went home to visit mum and dad for my birthday. And on the drive back up to Dinnellacourt in New South Wales, mum called me and said that she has had cancer.
Wow.
And yeah, it was devastating. I was pretty annoyed, to be honest. I was really pissed off at her because I was just like, why did you, like, we spent all weekend together. Why are you telling me this now? And yeah, and really, yeah, just awfully sad and so much unknown. And I finished my grad year up there and moved home and took a job that was 4 days a week so that I could spend 1 day a week with mum and worked through, you know, her treatments and stuff with her and just got to have some more time, which was really lovely.
Yeah.
Fast forward a few years, I got engaged in the November and mum had just had a period of remission and so she was really going okay, but I got engaged in the November and in the June we just found out that she'd been diagnosed with more aggressive cancer again. And so that summer we had a full DIY wedding. So it was like everything that mum and I just worked through, all of the things, looking on Pinterest, doing all the ideas, having, yeah, a really special experience. We got married in the March and then a year later mum messaged me one of her last messages that she sent to me saying happy anniversary, happy first anniversary. And then a month later, she passed away.
Oh, wow.
And that period was really like we went through a really, it was probably like a month of like this labor of death for mum. It was quite a big experience. And she's one of 13 siblings. And so lots of her family moved down to the town and we hired a house and we were all there in it together. And so we went through that period and talking about this unraveling that occurred like after mum's death, I didn't go back. I went back for a couple of months to work and then I decided not to finish my current contract and just stopped working. And that was for me the best decision that I made at that time. For 6 months, I sat at home and did everything you can imagine. Like I learned to journal, I learned to meditate, I ran every day and bawled my eyes out. I watched lots of Grey's Anatomy.
Oh, wow.
I couldn't afford yoga because I didn't have an income. So I went and cleaned my local yoga studio so I could sit there and do yoga all weekend, which was mostly, to be honest, just sitting in, you know, downward dog the resting one.
Yep.
And just crying.
Mm-hmm.
It was really big at that time to do like those knitted like wall weave.
Yes.
Weaving. And so I weaved and I listened to spiritual podcasts and I just went on this massive journey of like letting go and understanding who I was and really like I learned a lot about my boundaries and what were my choices versus other people's choices. I learned about expectation and the way that people showed up for me was not the way that maybe I expected them to show up for me and how I want to be in the world and what it means for me to be in the world. And, you know, like that feeling when you're like first, like just post-birth and you're like walking down the street without your baby and you're just like, oh, like, do you just not know? Like, I've just like given birth. It's like, I'm like everything amazing, you know? Yeah. And it was the same thing for like death. Like, none of this is important.
Yeah.
What is actually important?
Yeah. And I think what I'm hearing in what you're saying there is just, I guess, the similarity in what I'm listening to when you talk about birth. And even when I think about my own experience of becoming a mother, it's like the world being turned upside down and, you know, your coping strategies and mechanisms and, you know, the walls of your world just crumbling down and really needing to go deep. And I think everyone deals with grief differently. So some people do what you've done, which sounds like, I'm sure it wasn't beautiful when it was happening, right? Like, I'm sure it wasn't beautiful and it would have been filled with so much depth of pain. But to listen to that, for me, to listen to that now sounds like a real honoring of that process of grief, I think.
Yeah.
And I think that that's a lovely way to be able to do that. You know, some people obviously may not do that, may sort of turn away from that. But yeah, so I can see that similarity in the, it's almost like a becoming, you know, similar to when you become a mother, right? Like a becoming, like who are you now without this person who's guided you all along, you know? And I also think that when it comes to death, I don't think there's many people who think about it before it actually touches their lives. And so there isn't really, it's almost like we just believe that people will always be there.
Yeah.
And then it can be quite a shock and a surprise when that's not the case. What do you think about that?
Yeah, I definitely think that. And for me, I was 27 when Mum passed away, and it was definitely, you know, not something that my peers and the people that I was spending time with were talking about or understood. And that was, yeah, a really big, yeah, a big, learning and becoming and changing and sort of reprioritizing almost.
Yeah.
Yeah, which I think like definitely held me in a bit of good stead for, you know, like I know you can't say perfectly good stead,
but
like it felt like I had some sort of grounding or like I'd done a little bit of reevaluation prior to being, you know, unraveling again in motherhood. But yeah, I just felt like I had had a little bit of practice almost.
And so how did that, I mean, there's so many levels here in terms of what that experience, I can only imagine, right, in terms of what that experience must be then to become a mother when your own mother isn't there. And so, of course, that's not someone anyone necessarily expects to happen if they've always had their mother present with them in their lives. So walk me through a little bit of what that ended up being like for you.
Yeah, so I think for my first postpartum after I had Harry, there was definitely, I really felt like I still had that really, that longing and that sort of looking outward and that looking for that mum, for my mum, but for looking for like a mothering kind of thing, like a mothering kind of person or, yeah, I just felt like I was often looking out in my first postpartum. It felt like I was seeking, longing, you know, that for me personally, that looked like, you know, like when you want to call like somebody, like you're having an experience, like it's, you know, whether it's a good or a bad experience, you just feel like you just want to call. And for me, Mum was always the person I just called. And I didn't really know why I was calling or what I actually wanted from her. But it was that she was just like, the initial reaction was to pick up the phone and call Mum. And I think that was one of the biggest things that I found most challenging when I first became a mum, because I had so many feels, you know, like there's so many new experiences and so many questions, like so many unanswered questions throughout early motherhood where you just like, I just want to speak to Mum. And I also wanted like for very much for, because it was my first pregnancy and my first birth and my first time being a mum, I was Mum's first. And I wanted to know what that meant for her and how it looked like for her. And yeah, that was a really, that felt really big. And so I think at that time, I really had to do this like conscious kind of clunky thing where I'd be like, okay, so like I need help with learning how to feed or like learning how to tend to my, you know, my wounds post-birth, or, okay, I'll call my auntie who has experience in as a midwife, or I really need to just like sort of debrief about X, Y, Z. And so then I'd call my sister, or, you know, I'd have to clunkily kind of feel or think about who that person would be that would fill that void.
Yes. Yeah. And that it's really interesting, actually. I'm finding it really powerful to listen to you speak about this, because my own experience is that I didn't have my mother growing up at all. And she was in my life once I had my children, but because I didn't have that foundational relationship with her, I didn't have a relationship with her that was such that if I had an issue, I would call her. Like, in fact, probably I felt more that she would call me when she had an issue or a problem. And so that clunkiness that you're talking about there just resonates so deeply with me, because it's always been like, okay, I've got a problem. Now there's a problem solving hat on that's like, who do I call? Who's sort of an expert in this, like down the research rabbit hole on Google, like that's how I've always been in my life. And it's really interesting. It's a real juxtaposition, I guess, for me to hear that, because there, and I know that that's the case, but to hear you talking about it is that reminder of like, well, yeah, some people actually do have that. They have someone that they can turn to. They don't necessarily know the question they're, you know, going to ask or the answer that they're looking for, but it's just knowing that there's a base to return to. Mm-hmm. And I think that's special. And I can, so, you know, I'm thinking about, at the same time as hearing you, I'm thinking about the challenge that that's brought in my life. But for me, that was always how it was for me. And so when I had children, of course, things get more complicated, but it was a way of living that I was very used to by then. So I can only imagine that challenge that would exist when you are used to doing something so differently, you know, getting your emotional needs met in a particular way, having support, being mothered, right? Like just actually being mothered, and how deeply we all need that when we become mothers ourselves, and then not having that be there. You know, I can see how difficult that must have been, but I also see the tenacity, I think, in your experience and in other people who maybe have a similar one, where they do just have to hit the ground running and learn how to do that, and learn how to be that part of that nurture for themselves, and to, you know, source out. And in some ways, even, you know, when you talk about being maybe a bit more reserved or less sort of expressing your needs, how that in itself would have really challenged you in that way. Like you would have had to get out of your comfort zone.
Yeah, exactly. And I think, yeah, like I mentioned in the first postpartum, it was very much like seeking that out. But then I feel like for my second postpartum, I actually did go inward and actually kind of realized that I could find it in myself, and I could actually be the one to mother myself, which was really interesting, like the shift in like going, oh, I've got to look for these experts and these people and Google and all of that, like you were saying, and then to like step back and see it differently this time around and be like, oh, actually, I can do that myself. Mm.
So I'm really interested in hearing more about that and learning about, what does that look like, I guess, in the day-to-day for you to go from looking externally for, I mean, and some of those things we do need to look externally for, like, you know, there are some people that we really do need to bring into the space. And, you know, as we all know, like it does take a community or a village, you know, to raise children and to look after and nurture a mother within that space too, right? But, you know, on whatever level you are talking about where you're saying, I've learned in that second postpartum to actually go more inward and learn how to maybe parent myself, or however you might want to word that. Tell me about what that looks like for you.
Yeah. Yeah. So I think that it looks like a few different things. So I think it looks like being 7.5 years away from mum's death, it looks like grief looks differently. So I feel like I really resonated with, I don't know if you've heard about it, but like that grief as a ball in a box.
Yeah, I love that.
Yeah, with the little pain button. And yeah, so like the idea of like when you first are experiencing grief, the ball is really big and you hit the pain button inside the box a lot. And then as your grief changes and you're further away from that immediate pain, then your ball gets smaller and you move around the box and you only touch the pain button every now and again. And so I feel like being where I am now, the pain button doesn't get touched as often. And so when it does, I kind of feel like I can lean in to the emotions and the grief and the feelings in that moment.
Yeah.
And so, like, for me, when that happens, I can say to my husband, I'm having a grief day, or like, I'm really missing mum today, or like, or this moment, like, just reminds me so much of what mum would do, and I would just want mum today. And like, so I think that being further away from the grief, not feeling the pain intensely all the time, and then knowing that I can just turn to someone close to me and say, this is how I feel today, I think that's been really big for me. And then because I'm starting to notice that and become sort of more aware of me in those moments, then it kind of, I'm becoming more in tune with like what I'm feeling and doing. And then I can like look at it sort of more compassionately and be kinder to myself for feeling that way, if you know what I mean.
Yeah. Yeah.
And so, yeah. And so really, I resonate heaps with like Kristen Neff's self-compassion work.
Yeah.
And so like her three things are like the mindful, like being mindful, right? And being like aware of your suffering.
Yeah.
And so that's what that grief part is like. And it's like, okay, I'm mindful. I'm aware that like I would really want mum in this situation and this is really hard and I want this. Well, this is, you know, but then also the other two components, which I know that you talk about a lot, is that common humanity, right? And knowing that I'm not alone, that actually there's lots of people who are experiencing grief. Yes. There's also lots of people who are mothering without a mother through death or circumstance, you know? Yeah. And the more that I'm away from the intense grief, the more that I can see people in a different kind of way. And so actually, like, I feel like I have more and more conversations where people say to me, like you were saying, like, I don't have a mum who has died, but I have a mum who's not there. And that is like actually helping me with the common humanity.
Yeah.
Like it's kind of like, oh, you know, like I'm not alone in this. This is not, it's not just my experience. And then that lends itself to more compassion, right? And more kindness to you.
Absolutely. It's such a powerful thing to share stories of our own and to hear the stories of other people. And one of the things, that I've learned about doing this podcast is how similar actually we all are. And even if our circumstances are dissimilar, that our responses and our reactions are very similar. So the human experience itself is very similar, is very common. It's just that the circumstances may be different. And I think what a beautiful healing experience for you to be able to, you know, share parts of your story with people in whatever capacity and in different situations, but to also receive that lovely healing when people share that with you as well. Because I think that is, you know, that's really lovely. Yeah, really lovely. And I think that's one of the things, I think for me personally, my whole life, I've always been someone who's very open. I've always been open book on stuff, possibly to my own detriment in my sort of younger years. But certainly having become a mother, I think that I have leaned on that quality so greatly because it has brought me women. It has brought me women of all different ages, whether that is women who are like grandmothers, women who are new mothers, maybe women who don't have children yet, women who are, you know, in the first couple of years. And, you know, for me, not having had the mother and that sort of, I did have feminine influences, but not as strongly as I kind of had my dad and other men who were around. It's really allowed me to lean into the knowing that I actually really need that nurturing and to share enough to make it safe for other people to also share. And then we both have that, you know, we both get that lovely nurturing. And yeah, I mean, I've really found that my life today looks like attending like moon circles and women's circles and, you know, all sorts of things like this and trying to really maintain and nurture the relationships I have with other women specifically, because I sort of have come to a point in my life where I realized like, wow, actually I really did miss a lot from not having that. And I think what I'm hearing from you is that, you know, you may have had that maybe even if we're just talking about from your mother, but then coming to a place later on where you have, where you're able to lean into that, you know, more so in terms of within that community space as well.
Mm. Yeah, definitely. And I was going to also say, like, I'm a women's circle facilitator. So like, that is definitely what I find in circle as well, is that being able to share stories and really hearing other people's stories in your own, even if they're not, like you said, not even like remotely the same. Yeah. One of the other things I wanted to share around like being able to mother myself or like support myself, one of the things I've been thinking about a lot lately is also just like the way that I talk to myself or the way that I am in certain situations. So like recently I was listening to some mums talk about like, what was it exactly? It was like, we were talking about the red thread and our birth experiences and our mother's birth experiences. And they were talking about going back to their mum and asking these questions. And one of the things that I noticed was that I would quickly go to like, oh, I don't, that's not me. I don't have that sort of like that kind of like a bit like woe me kind of like, oh, like it's hard for me, that kind of inner voice. And then what I have been finding lately is being able to like gently move that inner voice and actually go, mum's with me all the time. And actually I know what she would, you know, what she would say. And I've heard these stories before and I can find them in other people and, you know, not all is lost, I think. And then also being able to like just mother myself in that, like, I got my own inner mother. I do this with my kids, like my boys, like often being cheerleaded, you know, like, and compassionately talked to, and, you know, all of those nice things that I can actually do for myself as well. And, you know, I can actually say, I'm so proud of you today, Ali. What an amazing thing you did. Or, you know, like I can say that was really hard and, you know, next time we can try this together.
Yeah.
Or, you know, like I can do that for myself.
Yeah, you can be your own cheerleader, can't you?
Yeah. So that's been really big.
That's wonderful. Thank you for sharing that. And I had a question about, I was just thinking over some of the things that you said just now in terms of identity. And one of the things I was also thinking, just to take it back a little bit, is that, you know, when your mother died, that you talk about, you know, having gone through like a real, and I think most people do go in some sense, like almost a dark night of the soul, you know, like and trying to make sense of that and trying to find healing and a way forward from that point. I imagine that the similarity that you talk about in terms of the change, the becoming, the adjustment that we go through and become mothers, and also that same sort of similar, I guess, experience that you had when your mother passed. How do you feel that influenced your sense of identity as you became a mother? So what I mean is, you know, for many people who maybe haven't gone through such a huge life change, like the death of a loved one, like especially of a parent, you know, maybe their identity has felt quite stable up until the point where they've become a mother, you know, without huge change within that. How do you feel that kind of positioned you for then becoming a mother? Because obviously the identity shift is a big piece of what people often experience when they become mothers. Do you feel like having gone through what you did sort of, what was that, maybe four years earlier? Yeah, with your mother. Do you feel like that prepared you in some way for dealing with the identity stuff that would happen for you in motherhood? Or do you feel like you still kind of experienced that in a huge way as well?
Yeah, I think I would like to say that it did, but I feel like I had a huge identity shift with both of my postpartums.
Yeah.
And I think that's why I love being in the space of supporting mothers, because I really felt that in a big way. I think that what mum's death and that time helped me was kind of build the foundations of like the ability to shift the layers of conditioning and shoulds, shed like a little layer. And I think that like it almost gave me permission or evidence, maybe it was evidence that I could,
yeah.
I could do this and that not all is lost and I will feel myself again. I think that's what it,
that is really powerful. Like, yeah. That is so powerful because I think that what makes it so difficult when we are going through that identity change, and a lot of people feel like, you know, it's an ego death in many ways, right? Is that we don't know when it's going to end. And I think that when we know that there is an end point, and this is how I kind of feel about birth too, because I, you know, had these two home births. And one of the things that I remember people talking to me about before I had any births and certainly after was around managing pain. And I remember saying, like, I know it's going to end at some point, so I can tolerate it for as long as it needs to be tolerated for. I can move through it because I know there's an end to it. When I don't know that there is an end and I feel out of control with the situation, that's when the fear comes in. And I think for many people, when they're moving through matrescence for the first time and they haven't undergone maybe such a, you know, reality shaking experience like the death of a really close loved one, a parent in particular, there isn't that knowing that that's going to be the end. And I feel like also that's part of what was so scary even about the pandemic, actually, because we didn't know when that was going to end. So, yeah, I think that that's a beautiful learning, I think, a lesson that you were able to take with you into mothering, which is that, you know, there will be an end to this. You know, when people say this too shall pass, it's like, but sometimes you don't know because you're just saying that, but you don't actually have any concept of like what it will be like when it's passed. So for you, I think, you know, how wonderful that you could say something like that to yourself and know it to be true, like really know it.
Yeah. Yeah. And I think that even that reminds me so much in between my first and second postpartum, I did a training with Nikki McKinnon, her Seasons of Matrescence. And it reminds me so much of that, right? Of like being in a winter. And one of the things that I feel like I can bring to people and to like a knowing in myself is that I can winter and come out to spring, you know. I think like that feels like a really innate knowing in myself, is that like it can be dark and hard and really, really challenging, but there will
be that spring. Is so powerful. I'm so glad that you brought that up. I just gave me full body like feelings, like it's so powerful. And I mean, I have really leaned into this concept of the seasons for my experience of the world, because I've really lent into understanding my cycle over the last couple of years. And so the seasons has been such a big thing. And even for my husband, actually, that I can talk to him about the seasons in terms of how I'm feeling. And he has some concept now of, okay, that's what that means. And I also know it won't last forever. So that's a really lovely concept. I hope people are able to bank that for later, because that's beautiful. Yeah. So, I mean, I often ask people, you know, what their biggest challenge has been in mothering and what their biggest kind of area of growth has been. I feel like you've talked a lot about that, but I still want to offer up that opportunity to answer that if you feel that you have something very specific that you want to say about either of those, or do you feel like we've kind of covered those?
Yeah, I think the biggest challenge, I think that for me, what I have found is that like I thought it would be first coming into motherhood and like the actual like mothering practices, you know, like, you know, feeding the baby, sleep, you know, all the like sleep settling, putting clothes on them, changing a nappy, those things. I thought that they would be challenging for me. And, you know, there were things that I had to learn in my first postpartum, but I feel like I actually had those down pat by the time I went into my second postpartum. But my second postpartum was so much more challenging for me than I expected, for many, many reasons. But like two of the biggest things were that I had lots of difficulty breastfeeding. I was in a lot of breastfeeding pain from when Pat was 4 months to 8 months when we weaned. And also that I had a really significant like diastasis recta, like the separation. And so like they were really big physical kind of challenges for me that I think like brought a lot of stuff up, and, you know, the layering of sleep deprivation and all of those things. But also like I solo parented a lot in that postpartum, and also childhood memories came up for me that I wasn't expecting in my second postpartum. And I think that those things are not often spoken about. And so I guess I just wanted to bring that into the conversation just at this moment, because I kind of thought, well, you know, like there's of layers.
There are so many layers. And I think that, I mean, I resonate with that on all levels, but especially for me, my kids are 7 and 5. And we're now out of that stage of, you know, sleep and feedings, although, you know, I still have a picky eater, but, you know, they sleep well, like all of that stuff's kind of dealt with, you know, like they're now out into the world in many ways. And now we're in this stage where we're navigating the self-esteem of my children and ensuring that that is strong and seeing when that looks wobbly and exploring about that and doing self-reflection on how we can support that or maybe how we haven't supported that, you know, navigating social situations at school and all this stuff that is coming up from my own experience of schooling that wasn't nice, you know. And it's just like, you know, there are so many levels and it is so deep and there's more and there's more and there's more. And of course, as you go through that, not to frighten anyone who maybe isn't at that point, but as you go through that, you are more equipped, you know, like you've been evolving that entire time. So you're ready for the next stage, but there's still so much unknown, right, in those stages. And I think that, you know, when you talked earlier about leaning into your own sort of knowing and your own ability to find the answers and to navigate, whether that means you're looking within yourself or you're looking for experts because you need that support. It's such an important skill, I think, and practice, because that is so much what you need, especially when the kids do get older and there's deeper stuff going on. Like not deeper, like the stuff is shallow that's before that, but a lot of those, you know, some of those things that you're talking about, like the feeding and all of that sort of stuff, it's the tangible day-to-day stuff, which is exhausting because it feels like it never ends, right? But then there's like less of that, but then there's like more stuff that you're thinking about on an emotional, psychological kind of level. And it's so anyway, yeah, it's just a really important skill, isn't it? To be able to lean into, I've got this. And again, coming back to that seasons, I think, as well, really seeing that. I feel like the seasons flow through faster than in a month's time here at my house. Like we're like cycling through those seasons like mad. But yeah, no, that's so lovely. Thank you for sharing that.
That's okay. I think there's also like a piece of worthiness, right? Like that we're like worthy of support and we're worthy of like asking for help. And that's a practice almost in itself as well. And I think that just when you were talking then, I was like, yeah, that like there's so much in that. But you've also got to feel worthy enough to like find that, I think, as well.
Absolutely. Yeah, absolutely. And even, you know, in terms of the worthy thing, I mean, it's absolutely something that comes up so much with, you know, with women I work with. It also makes me think about that for many women who are struggling with that, that motherhood tends to be, for these women that I've met and spoken to anyway and worked with, can really be a driver to doing the work for finding that peace where we feel a sense of belief in the idea that we are worthy. And a lot, and I think that some of that is because it can be, I think for some people, when it's only being driven by themselves, for themselves, if we already don't feel worthy, that feels really hard, right? But when we have children and we start to recognize the importance of them feeling worthy and them loving themselves and appreciating all the gifts that they bring, and also appreciating those things that might be considered weaknesses or vulnerabilities, because all of those things make up a person. And so they're all beautiful, right? And I think that's a really lovely part of motherhood as well, is that it can, or mothering rather, is that it can motivate us to find the one place within us that we feel worthy and then to continue to grow that and allow that to expand. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. I love that.
Yeah. Oh, this has been so wonderful. I do also want to ask, because we haven't spoken in depth about how your work, you know, has been influenced by mothering. So you did mention that you run circles, which is so wonderful. And I think, I mean, in some ways, I wonder if a lot of the drive for that, maybe you were doing that already before, I'm not sure, but the drive for that maybe is connected to your own sense of wanting to be held by other women in community.
Yeah. I started circles in my second year postpartum after Harry, and it was definitely about connection, but it was also about like understanding who I was. It was definitely moving back into a space that was mine and mine alone, away from mothering, so that I could work out who I was again. Yeah, so that's definitely why I jumped into circles. But I did a lot in between my postpartums or the births of my two boys. I studied to be a doula. So I'm now a postpartum doula and do that in-home fourth trimester support for mums in my local area. And I also do postpartum planning and birth debriefing, which I'm super passionate about. That storytelling piece is so important for every mum post-birth, and talking about their stories in circles. And I really just want to be a listener of stories and a storyteller. That's really my, feel like that's my big work in the world.
Yeah. I really want to highlight something that I just was thinking about too, which is that one of the things that I notice about my mothering is that when I mother my children, and in fact, when I mother other women, that I feel mothered myself. Like I feel like I'm giving something to a part of me that needed something at one point in my life. And I just sort of recognize the synchronicity of that maybe for you as well, right? Like that holding of mothers, you as someone who didn't have your own mother, you know, that I wondered about, does that give something back to that part of you that was the first time mother, you know, that didn't have your mother there, that you can provide that for other people?
Oh, it has to, right? Like definitely. I think that maybe not consciously, but of course, like subconsciously, that's definitely me, like giving a little rub and a little cuddle and you've got this kind of thing from past Ali for sure. And I think also for other versions of the people around me too, like my mum, you know, like thinking about her and her motherhood and, you know, the struggles that she had, and my sisters, and thinking of their struggles and the things that they went through in early motherhood. Like it's all like interconnected, right? Like you're mothering the world as you mother yourself, and you're mothering others.
Yeah, absolutely. You know? Oh, what a beautiful, you know, full circle, you know, moment in some ways. Yeah, so wonderful. And I want to jump in and ask you, actually, just as a summary, what would you most like to impart on mothers who are listening today?
It has to be around self-compassion. It has to be around mothering yourself, being kind to yourself, recognizing those moments where you're saying something that may be a little bit too harsh or a little bit unkind, and being able to like just gently nudge it in the compassionate and kind direction.
Yeah.
And that you can keep doing that. It's a practice and it can get easier and it doesn't feel as wobbly the more you practice it. And I would really love for more people to be much more kinder to themselves.
How beautiful. I'm just letting that sit for me. That's wonderful. Thank you so much, Ali. Before I let you go, I want to ask you a couple of rapid fire questions that gives us a bit of insight into the rest of you outside of maybe this conversation. So what are you listening to at this moment in your life? And that could be music or, you know, a particular artist or podcasts.
I've been loving Lizzo. Maybe I'm a little bit late to the game, but I've been really like getting into the music. And I'm also learning to sing at the moment.
Wow, that's so good. I love that.
I'm not a singer, but I am learning to sing. And one of Mum's favorite artists was Cyndi Lauper. And so I'm learning to sing time after time.
Oh, wow.
So that's been something I've been practicing and listening to. And been on my mind lots.
Oh, how wonderful. That's so sweet. That's so amazing. And yes, I love Lizzo as well. I actually saw her in concert when she came here earlier this year. I've always liked some of her songs, but never been like a mad fan of Lizzo. But certainly since I went to that, she's been on high rotation here at home and the kids are really enjoying that.
So good fun.
Totally relate. And what's the last TV show that you binged?
Sex Education. Yeah.
Do you know, I've had so many people say that. That show is getting around.
Have you watched it?
I've watched a little bit. I think a long time ago, I don't even know how many seasons there are now, but I think I started watching season one. I couldn't get into it when I first started watching it, but everyone keeps telling me it's great. So maybe it's one of those ones for me that is a slow burn at the beginning. And then once you really get into all the characters and stuff, like it kind of carries you through and it gets, you know, more interesting. I've heard a lot of people say good things about the most current season, so might have to revisit that.
I had some big cathartic cries throughout this current season, so I just love that they're able to just get to so many important topics.
Yeah,
And how wonderful, right? Like to be reaching such an audience on stuff that has been really taboo for such a long time. So it's really wonderful. And what is the most influential book you've read?
Oh, I've been thinking about this. I feel like in terms of my like motherhood journey, it's definitely Amy Taylor Cabaza's, what's it called? Mama Rising.
Yeah.
That was huge for me and really opened up a door that I just wasn't thinking about. So that was definitely a big book. I don't know. I'm one of those people who reads lots of books but like forgets
titles.
Quickly. Like I'm just like, oh, that was a really good book. And then I forget about it.
Next. I can be really like that too, actually. Yeah. I was just talking to a friend yesterday about how I have a few books that are like my seminal books that I try and read every year that just seem to like recalibrate me. If I don't return to them, I just kind of like go off on my own tangent, which can sometimes be good, sometimes not. So yeah, I know what you mean. It's easy to forget the stuff because there's so much to, you know, have your mind over in life, but certainly in this phase when we're parenting little children. Absolutely. It's been such a pleasure talking to you, Ali. Thank you so much for creating time to talk with me. Where can listeners go to find out more about you?
On my Instagram, it's Ali Heppel underscore mothercare.
Okay, beautiful.
I'm getting a website slowly made. So hopefully by the end of the year, that will be up and that will be aliheppel.com. And they're the main places to find me. I'm always happy for a DM.
Yeah.
So please send through a message. And thank you. Thank you so much for having you, Yara. I just have loved this conversation and I felt very held in being able to share exactly what I wanted to share. So thank you.
Oh, thank you. I so appreciate it. And I think, you know, it's been a great conversation. We've really sat with some big things and this beautiful, vulnerable story of yours with your mother. And I know that there are, as you said, so many women out there who are mothering without mothers of their own for whatever reason. And I'm just so looking forward to having this in their ears and in their hearts. So, yeah, thank you so much. And I'll make sure to link those links that you mentioned in the show notes just for people listening as well.
Thank you.
Yeah, thank you. Thanks so much for joining me, Mama. If you enjoyed this episode, I would just love for you to leave me a review and follow or subscribe to be notified when the next episode drops. If you'd like to connect with me, you can find me over at Instagram where my handle is at lifeafterbirthpsychology, and you can find out more about how I can support you on your mothering journey at my website www.lifeafterbirth.com.au. See you back here soon for our next chat.